On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, Jake Donovan is here with us. We had three major fights this weekend, three different divisions, all with Canelo Alvarez looming over him. David Benavidez got the win. Janabek got the win. Joshua Buatsi got the win. We're going to talk a fight of the year discussion and a mailbag segment. Let's get into it. Let's talk boxing. What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Got a fun one planned for you today. Jake Donovan is on the show, great writer over at Boxing Scene. He was there in Arizona this past weekend to see David Benavidez's destruction of David Lemieux. We're going to talk about everything that's going on at 168. As we record this, it looks like Canelo Alvarez has let the public know what his next plan is, and that's fighting Gennady Golovkin for a third time at 168 for all the belts. I actually like this fight a lot. I was on the fence about it before the Bivol fight. I didn't understand why we needed to see a third fight, you know, 5 years after their second one, especially a second fight that I thought Canelo won. I had Golovkin winning the first one. But the fact that Canelo's coming off of a loss, the fact that Golovkin hits hard and he's willing to stand and trade, and he could potentially hand Canelo a second straight loss and send his career into a real tailspin. This is a big fight now. This has a lot of good storylines. Obviously, I want to see Canelo fight a Benavidez. I want to see Canelo fight a Jermall Charlo. There's other fights I want to see Canelo in next. But if you're going to give me Golovkin, a fun trilogy fight, if we learned anything from the trilogies and if we learned anything from Fury and Wilder fighting for that third time, that was arguably the best fight of the three. You know that Golovkin can hit. You know that he can take a punch. Can he take shots to the body? Can Canelo bounce back? Fun fight at 168 pounds this fall. Benavidez takes out Lemieux stunning fashion. I thought that Lemieux would last a little bit longer. Obviously, I had Benavidez winning in round 7 through 12. That did not happen. We'll talk about what goes on at 168 with Jake Donovan. Janabek, a guy from Kazakhstan, could be the future king at 160 pounds by process of elimination. He had a huge win on ESPN. We'll talk about that with Jake as well and what's going on at 160. You got champions at 160 that are no longer going to be fighting at 160, are moving up to 168. Then, of course, 175-pound picture, which is a little clear, a little more clear, because I don't think Canelo is going to be hanging around 175 too long. So the champions there are going to have to fight each other, or you would think that they're going to fight each other. Before we get to Mr. Jake Donovan, I got to tell you about Manscaped. Sweaty sack summer is approaching, and it's time for you to prioritize the comfort of your crotch. People, sweaty sack summer is not approaching. Sweaty sack summer is here. This past weekend in New York City, it was very hot. I was at the Yankee game, sweating everywhere besides my crotch. You know why? Because I was wearing the new boxers that they have for us. So breathable. It's like gills for your groin. They've even trademarked the jewel pouch, so you know it's serious. I think it's time you invest in your family jewels. I think it's time, and it's time to do it now. So let your bulge breathe. Get 20% off and free shipping using code BOXING at manscaped.com. That's code BOXING. Now, I also have right here the ball deodorant that Manscaped sent me. It is a great, great product. This past Saturday, I was at the Yankee game, sweating profusely, but had the boxers on, the Manscaped boxers, felt phenomenal, felt cool down there. Also, after the game, you know, I had to go to the rest of the night, so I didn't have time to shower. So I threw on some of this Manscaped Crop Preserver ball deodorant, and I went on about my night, and I felt good. I felt great. You know, let's just say you're on a date with your partner and catch that Manscaped on the wristband of your underwear. It's almost guaranteed to raise some eyebrows and act like a billboard on the highway to Pleasure Town. They also have the Lawnmower 4.0. It's the best electric trimmer for below-the-waist grooming. Please, guys, stop. Do not use the trimmer that you trim your beard with down there. That's just wrong. Come on, we're adults. Get the Lawnmower 4.0. The underwear is great. It's just a fantastic company and a fantastic product, Manscaped. Use code BOXING, and you get 20% off free shipping. That's manscaped.com, code boxing. With that, let's get to Jake Donovan. All right, let's bring in our guest this week, Jake Donovan, BoxingScene.com, one of the best guys covering the sport right now. And the reason I love Jake so much, besides his great reporting, is that despite being out of New York for close to 20 years, still maintains the New York accent, stays true to his roots. I love that. What's going on, Jake?
Not much, Dan. Still got my New York area code as well, so kept the 631. Yep.
And that's true, because when we saw each other a few weeks ago for Taylor Serrano, you showed up on day one decked out in New York Knicks gear.
I sure did. I didn't know if I was at home or looked like a tourist, but whatever, man. It's the one place where I could wear all of that.
There we go. You just got back from... You're in Phoenix for David Benavidez versus David Lemieux. We were talking off air about the atmosphere there. It seems like they're building something special. I know Top Rank did a few shows in Arizona, underutilized market, in my opinion, but it's pretty clear that they like their boxing and they love David Benavidez.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasant surprise about that. There was a little bit of a risk because, you know, ticket sales were a little bit slow going into fight week, but, you know, the promoters had to be reminded that Glendale, apparently, which is right outside of Phoenix, is a very big walk-up town. So they said, you know, even if it's like 3,000, 4,000, don't worry, the fans will turn up. And sure enough, they turned up. They had the upper deck, you know, sectioned off, but the lower bowl was completely full. And even like the early guys, the guys from Mesa and, you know, the surrounding parts of Phoenix, they brought their fans. And it was rabid all night, whether there was 100 people in there or I think it was close to 6,000 by the time the main event rolled up. So it was a really good atmosphere. Fight week was terrific. Every event was well attended. So yeah, they're doing a really, really good job.
Yeah, Benavidez walkout, which probably lasted longer than the fight, but it was something special. I mean, you felt something different in the air, and that was really nice to see. But we're going to talk about the three main events this weekend. The three main events also took place in three different weight classes, Jake, but they all had ties to Canelo Alvarez, of course.
Yeah, crazy.
160, 168, 175. It looks like Canelo has tipped his hand a little bit as we record this. It looks like he says he will be fighting Gennady Golovkin sometime in the fall. But let's start with where you were this weekend with David Benavidez's destruction of Lemieux. Now, I thought that Benavidez was going to win this fight big. Did not think it was going to come that fast. Benavidez told me last week, and I'm sure he's told this to you as well, and boxing fans have seen this if they've been watching Benavidez fight. It's that he's not a one-punch knockout guy. He's an accumulator. He's a guy that will break you down. But he landed that quick left hook that staggered Lemieux in the first round and got him out of there. But I said this, once Benavidez gets going and once he lets those hands go, he is a great combination puncher, a great performance for Benavidez.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your viewpoint. I mean, for what Benavidez wanted to accomplish, this was a fantastic styles matchup. In terms of being competitive, it was miserable. I mean, it was just a volume puncher versus a guy with wide open defense. I'm with you. I knew it was going to be a brutal knockout. I thought it was my pick was six rounds or less, maybe five rounds or less. When I saw, you know, David Lemieux showed up with, you know, the dad bod at Friday's weigh-in, I was like, all right, maybe this one won't be competitive at all. But yeah, he found that opening early. I think he even surprised himself. Once he found that opening, it was just like uppercut city. I mean, he had to, you know, you're the punch deck guy, you know, but I don't know how many uppercuts he threw in those, you know, less than three rounds, but that had to have been his dominant punch for the fight. So, you know, David Lemieux, he said he was going to do everything he could do to, you know, he wasn't going to win, but he did as much as he could to win. So, you know, I guess somewhat credit to him for lasting as long as he did. You know, his skin didn't completely fall apart, but it was, you know, but David, I was, you know, I like what David Benavidez did. He was there to give his fans a show. He said he wanted everyone to leave entertained. That was his mission. And it was mission accomplished in a very big way. And the thing I appreciate even before that is that the way he handled fight week, he was very responsible with his time, you know, appreciate his fans, engaging with the media. You know, he handled it like a rising star, which is what PBC is grooming him to be. He said he wants to become the face of boxing in Arizona, that, you know, really like 2 hours away is, you know, Oscar Valdez has Tucson, but that's really about it in the Phoenix area. So he has a very big opportunity, especially with the real estate that PBC owns at 168. Yeah. He has a huge opportunity to become a star, and especially in his childhood hometown.
It's a few things from your response there. It's like, he is one of the top guys that PBC has to build around. Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's also fans. I don't know if you take a look around, like, he's only 25 years old.
Yes.
Benavidez has been around for a long time. He said he went pro in 2013 when he was like 15 or 16 years old. So, you know, a young guy, and you're right with him in terms of being media friendly. I said this to him last week when I had him. I was like, Ben, you do a lot of interviews and you don't just give, you know, BS answers. You're very respectful. Mm-hmm. That's going to go a long way, too, because, you know, you want to get your story out there. So I thought it was a great performance. It's sometimes it's about how you win. when it's a mismatch like that. We don't want to see you, you know, we've seen guys go in there and play with their food, you know, get a decision win. That's not enough. You know, sometimes you got to go in there and get your guy out of there spectacular fashion so you can start banging the drum for some of these fights that we want to see David Benavidez in. We're going to talk about that next, too. 168 pounds is loaded. But before we get to the picture at 168, afterwards, Samskin Lukowicz had some things to say. Obviously, everyone wants to see Benavidez fight Canelo. He says that's not realistic. He said just stop. Right. Whether that was just a way to get headlines, whether that was a way to entice Canelo, get under his skin. He says that Benavidez will be back in November against either Plant, Jermall Charlo, or David Morrell. What did you make of those comments from Samskin Lukowicz saying that Canelo is not going to be any time in the future?
So in a sense, they're really on board with that, because I had a very good conversation with Benavidez, you know, before the fight, after the fight. And he said the same thing. Like, he's going to answer the questions about Canelo. He was the number one contender. So he, you know, he felt he should have got the title shot based on that. He won the interim title. So that was, he said, I got the receipt. I'm next in line for him. But he understands the reality that Canelo was on his own path for 22. He told us he's on his own path for 2022. David gets that. That's why, you know, they went to PBC and said, I want to fight all these guys that we have. I want to fight all the names you mentioned, Caleb Plant, Jermall Charlo, David Morrell. That's his checklist, perhaps even in that order, or maybe if you want to flip Morrell and Charlo. But so that's what Samson is getting at. He's like, you know, you keep asking us questions about Canelo. David's gracious enough to answer. Samson's not going to answer those anymore. It's like, look, Canelo's not going to fight us. You know, these are the fights that are going to happen. So let's get excited about it. And all three of them are damn good fights, you know, because if you think about it, if Caleb Plant doesn't fight Benavidez after he beats Anthony Durrell, who is he going to fight? Mm-hmm. All these guys, it's like, who is their next option? Like, if they don't fight David, or if they don't, like, are we excited about Caleb Plant and David Morrell? It's probably a good fight, but it like, David Benavidez has become like the driving force. Jermall Charlo as well. I think once he moves up, you know, he can be the A side of a big fight, even if he doesn't fight Benavidez next. But, you know, these are the fights that we should be asking about, not just everyone standing in line waiting for a Canelo shot. Right. And even if all the sanctioning bodies did their job and properly enforced their mandatories and had good mandatories like David Benavidez, he would still be last in line, because the last mandatory that Canelo actually made was against Abney Yildirim, which that, right. Yeah, let's not even go there. But before that, Caleb made his IBF mandatory against Caleb Truax. So Zach Parker is actually next in line if Canelo had to make a mandatory. So Benavidez would still be waiting out that title shot. So I like his attitude that he's not going to sit around. He's not going to take more fights like what he's had, that he wants to fight the big guns at 168. PBC has these guys. You know, they need to, you know, really, you know, drive the audience. He's willing to do it. As you said, you know, for as long as he's been around, he's 25 now, he's in his prime, and he's hitting his marketing prime too. That's the big thing.
Yeah, he's got a great smile. He gives great quotes. He, the Mexican monster, Mike Tyson gives him a nickname. That's another thing you can build upon. But it's not the worst thing to be asked about Canelo everywhere you go. You know, I think a lot of fighters would love that. But yeah, you're right. Let's look at it realistically. Samson Lukowicz can see, you know, the tea leaves that you just pointed out. It's like, okay, so it's just not going to happen. Even if Benavidez plays the mandatory game, and even if he is the interim champion right now at 168, I mean, he's in a great position, you know, with some of these names. But when you look at 168 now, do you think it could mimic what we have seen over the last 5 years at 154, with 154 being all under the same umbrella? The top guys at 168 are all with Showtime and PBC. It's Benavidez, Plant, Charlo, Morrell. Someone, like, the domino has to fall first, and it's either going to be Benavidez versus Charlo. But if you take a look at it with Charlo, I think he's going to wait this out a little bit, because if Canelo goes down to 168, I can see Charlo Canelo as a safe landing spot. But my question for you is, do you think we can see what we saw at 154 within the PBC Showtime umbrella play out at 168?
I definitely do. I think it'll actually generate more attention, believe it or not. Because like I said, I believe Benavidez is a rising star. The thing I like too, like, let's say hypothetically he fights David Morrell next and he beats David Morrell. That would still be David Morrell's fighting on June 4th. That'll be his seventh pro fight. So if he wins that, he fights Benavidez.
That's
and
a
he
risky
loses.
Fight, no?
Right, but he still only has 8 fights into his pro career. Now, granted, he, you know, he had the amateur career to where, you know, it justifies him taking these big leaps, but he still has time to reset in 2023. But even if David Benavidez loses, he still has time to reset in 2023. I know he's on like his third chance now with, you know, having failed a drug test and come in overweight. But, you know, again, these guys are young enough to where they're still going to be major players. Like, I mean, Jermall Charlo overcame a disputed loss to become undisputed champion with 3 fights later. So, you know, these guys, it's like a loss isn't going to ruin them. A draw isn't going to ruin these guys. So I could definitely see 168, especially with PBC mixing and matching the right way. yes, from the rest of the year, 2023, maybe even to 2024, a lot of good fights on the horizon.
Yeah, I said 154 is like, could be with boxing, like, could be. You know, like, it could be everything that's right with the sport. You know,
absolutely.
Top guys facing top guys. If someone loses, whatever, next guy up next, and just keep playing it all out. And it's still playing on right now. It's been going on for, like, 5 years now. You know, next guys step up, whether it's Fundora, whether it's Tim Zhu. You know, Brian Castagno pretty much came and burst onto the scene. We got one guy in Jermell Charlo. That can play out at 168. What do you think is next for all these guys? If you could play matchmaker, if you could, you know, look into your crystal ball, what would you say is next for Benavidez? Like, what are the next two or three fights for all these guys?
So before, it was weird. I did an interview with him before the Errol Spencer, Dennis Ugas fight. And his sense was that if they get Caleb and Darrell in the ring quick enough that, and Caleb Plant wins, that would be his next fight. Then the whole thing happened with him and Charlo, you know, they went after each other, you know, at ringside for the Spence Ugas fight. So after that, he kind of got the sense, you know what, maybe this Charlo fight does have some traction to it. They're making a very strong push for David Morrell, believe it or not. So if David Morrell
leave, it's crazy. Riskiest of all of them, right? It's like, what do you gain?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I guess for them, Benavidez, he did win, had Zach Parker and Demetrius Andrade for it. That was supposed to be for the WBO interim title. Mm-hmm. Whoever won that, WBC and WBO already agreed to create, like, have them fight. They're calling a unified mandatory challenger. As ridiculous as it sounds, at least it's one less guy standing in line, you know, waiting for a Canelo fight.
Yeah.
So that same theory would be applied if David Benavidez fought David Morrell. You have the secondary WBA title holder, the secondary WBC title holder. Again, one less guy standing around waiting for the winner of Canelo and Triple G3, which, as you know, we're speculating will be the fight. So I can see that strong push for that. Now, especially, we don't have a date yet for Plant and Darrell. I think it should be announced soon, but if that fight takes place any later than July, that's not a realistic option for November.
Yeah.
It should be. I mean, you know, guys should be able to fight two or three times a year, but they're not. So understanding the schedule, you can't expect them to turn around that quickly.
Right. So Lukowicz, you know, kind of tipped his hand. You know, it's either going to be Plant. It's either going to be Charlo. It's either going to be Morrell. Kind of painted himself into a corner. Like it was, just said, Plant may not be ready in time. Charlo, if he's smart, like, he's getting closer and closer to a Canelo fight. You know, if Canelo fights at 168 and wins, I know he's talking about Bivol, but
yeah.
It's just it's a twisted up situation, and you know what could happen, Jake? Sure. Gennady Golovkin can somehow beat Canelo, and then he's the guy at 168, and then we could see this all over again, that guys that were at 160 circling Golovkin could be happening at 168. Let's go to 160
crazy.
Now. We saw a fight this weekend. Janibek Alimahanhouli. I just destroyed his name. I'm just going to go with – how about – let's just for the
sake – We're
just going to go with Janibek. The guy's a beast. We knew that. He's improving every time he steps in the ring. Danny Dignam, this was not a good matchup here. He was out of there in the – he goes knocked down the first round, you know, falling down on feints, gets brutalized with a nasty, nasty knockout. But Janibek has shown that he is now a player at 160, a division where three of the champions, Jake – are flirting with 168 in Canelo, a wide open division. The once what was the glamour division of boxing is a barren wasteland. It is a division that is now just waiting for Canelo. But we have a new player, and he goes by the name of Janibek.
Janibek, fantastic performance. Again, he was the one who chased, for all the guys who don't want to fight Demetrius Andrade, he was the one who chased after that fight. And in a sense, he kind of chased Andrade into looking at 168 just because he didn't want to take another fight that didn't have a lot of profile on it. So Janibek, again, you know, just what David Benavidez did in Glendale, Janibek did that in Las Vegas against an overmatched opponent. He didn't, like you said, he didn't play with his food. He went in there and he just absolutely annihilated this guy. Dignam's style, I thought that Janibek, he's another one. He's an accumulation puncher. I thought he was just going to brutalize him for like maybe 5 or 6 rounds, kind of similar to what he did to Rob Grant and to, you know, Hassan Endom. It was beautiful to see that he just, you know, he showed this guy, you don't belong in the ring with me, and just blasting him out. And like you said, middleweight division, it's ridiculously barren right now. So just because nobody has fought each other. I mean, we had the one unification bout earlier with Gennady and Ryota Murata, but that's been it.
That's been it. It's
so
wild.
Right. And then Gennady did that as kind of like, you know, marking time, waiting on his Canelo fight, because If the Canelo fight didn't win, I'll come. It's like, who is he going to fight next? So right.
The question would be is, like, Andrade was supposed to fight at 168. Zach Parker didn't happen. Shoulder injury. Haven't heard much from Team Andrade since that fight was canceled. Could you see him sticking at 168 to fight Janibek? I know Golovkin's not going to fight Janibek, even though Janibek said that Golovkin's a sellout for using the Mexican-style moniker, which I thought was interesting. That's a good way to curry some headlines, but... I mean, what's going on with this division? I mean, it's just all over the place. You have guys like Charlo, who is a champion, who is talking about going up to 168, but his next fight is at 160. Andrade had a fight scheduled at 168. Golovkin, as we record this, is going to be fighting Canelo at 168 pounds. So what is going on in this division? Is Janibek someone that is just like the beneficiary of these three guys moving up?
Definitely with Andrade. And I like that Top Rank seems like they're willing to invest in this guy too. What's going to work to Janibek's favor, the fact that the Parker-Andrade fight got canceled. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that Demetrius Andrade now has 180 days to defend his title against Janibek or give it up completely. So that's good news for Janibek. That interim title, this is where interim titles do work. Like, you know, when they're used properly, they are effective. For a guy like Janibek, he doesn't get screwed out of that title shot. Zach Parker is the one who's getting screwed now because there's no guarantee that the fight, you know, with Andrade gets rescheduled. So I don't know what's happening at 168 and why he wouldn't get Canelo next. But as far as 160, Janibek, he can now once again chase after Andrade. You know, Andrade is going to have to fight him or give up that belt if he's going to look at any fight at 168. But then the question is, if he gives up the belt, do we get Janibek and maybe a Chris Eubank Jr.? I don't know who the hell he's going to fight, because once you get past that championship level, the contender level is just miserable. There's
I was
going to
say, the other guys, I have the other guys penciled here. It's Jaime Munguia, who should not be listed as an other guy because he's so talented, but we can do a whole podcast on that guy's career and the arc that it's taken and what's going on with Jaime Munguia. Chris Eubank is one of the other guys. Carlos Adames is one of the other guys. These aren't good. These are good fighters, but this is how steep it falls off if the champions at the division move up to 168 and they don't fight each other. I mean, 160 is just strange, strange land in a division that was always considered, you know, one of the best. It was always like, you know, lightweight, 147, 160 in heavyweight. So it's interesting. Yeah. So maybe Janibek can emerge. I think you're right. Top Rank is going to hype this guy up almost ad nauseum. I know you were. I don't know if you went back and watched the telecast. I know you were in Arizona, but there was a lot of hype around this guy. It was pretty clear that they're going to get that ESPN Top Rank machine behind this guy, and maybe he can rule the division.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny. You mentioned Munguia. For some reason, he is still the number one contender in the WBO. So after his fight with Jimmy, assuming he beats Jimmy Kelly, I mean, we've seen some crazy upsets this year. So maybe him kind of nibbling around the edges bites him in the ass in June. But, you know, assuming he gets past him, he's going to have to fight someone. He can't get away with not fighting Charlo, not fighting Andrade, not fighting for the title and staying number one. So he's going to have to either give up that spot or go chase one of these guys pretty soon. So I would love to see Janibek Munguia. That would be Top Ranking, Top Ranking Golden Boy doing business together. That's a risky, risky fight for Munguia, who has already walked away from that fight. He had the chance to fight Janibek for this very title, and he just never responded to the offer. So that's why I keep going back to Chris Eubank Jr. You know, he's next in line in that alphabet rankings. Top Rank and Top Rank has a good relationship with Sky Sports in the UK too. Mm-hmm. That's a fight I can see, you know, doing good business in the UK, because you have to start marketing Janibek. That's the thing.
Eubank versus Janibek, I can see that in the UK. You know what's with Andrade? The fact that Andrade is a free agent, you know, he's got some leverage. You know, if he decides, I want to stay at 160, maybe Top Rank ESPN throw him a bag, and it's like overpay him, give him a three-fight deal, and maybe one of those fights is Janibek. Could you see that playing out? I know that's kind of like pie in the sky, but I'm just kind of spitballing here in a division that has very it's very up in the air.
I can see it. I'd have to ask, but I thought that he still had one more fight with Matchroom because the fight with Zach Parker didn't happen. I don't believe that invalidates the contract. I believe he still owes them, or they owe, whichever way you want to look at it. Right. Either he owes them one more fight, or they owe him one more fight. But they could do that fight, and he could leverage that. Say, hey, you know, I fight Janibek. Here's my safety net. I'll go fight a Top Rank. You know, I don't know what Top Rank would give him at that point, because again, the middleweight division is just all over the place. It's like, you know, all the titles are just really spread out, you know, on three different platforms. So But I, that's what I like the idea of, you know, they have to get Janovec some profile because he's not a big ticket seller yet. He's not, you know, he's not going to draw in audiences, but he has the style to do that. So you get him in with the right names and that helps build his profile. And, you know, what I hope they avoid is making him the next, you know, the second Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah,
you
I don't think he's going to do that. I mean, no, he just criticized them.
Exactly. Yeah. He's, you know, he's just perfect as Janovec. He's already got a good name, you know, to kind of build around. So yeah, let's just go.
Let's just go with that. And let's not, you know, do the whole Mexican style thing where you know, Golovkin, obviously it was a scheme, a marketing scheme, because he's completely abandoned that once he got that new deal with the zone. But bless my, like, I actually had Dingham lasting 6-7 rounds. I did a same game, a same day parlay for DraftKings. I had, okay. I had Buwatsi. Richards going to distance. So that hit first, and I was happy with that, plus 230. Yep. And then I had Dingham surviving until the seventh, but getting knocked out, 7 exactly. through 12. And the same thing with Lemieux. I had Lemieux winning in 7 through 12. Obviously, it did not hit, but that's what's going on at 160. Let's go to 175 quickly. Joshua Buwatsi gets the win over Craig Richards. Yeah. Obviously, just said went the distance. Buwatsi, good performance. These are the type of performances you need to climb that ladder. I don't think he's ready for the top talent at 175. Like, your thoughts on that? But it's a division that has a great top four at 175. Guys that are all willing and have good profiles, especially Dimitri Bivol. We're going to see what's going to go on with Better Be Evan, Joe Smith, and you got Zerto Ramirez lingering around too. Buwatsi, I think, is on the fringes the fringe of that discussion, but a good, solid win for Buwatsi on Saturday on the zone.
Yeah, and even better, it was that, like, Buwatsi, the one criticism about him is that he's not always the most entertaining fighter. So we got that as well. I thought it was a very good fight from both of them because Craig Richards is a bit of a wild card in that as well. But I really enjoyed the fight. It wasn't my favorite fight of the weekend, but I liked the performance from both guys. Neither guys went in negative. You know, they both went to win. They both went to outfight each other, and they gave us that. So Buwatsi, Virgil Hunter said it best that, you know, he doesn't want to throw this guy to the wolves, you know, so early. He's got, you know, the Olympic pedigree. He is on the verge of fighting for a title, but he doesn't need to be next for a title. Like, I think Eddie mentioned that, you know, what about Buwatsi and Beterbiev? And, you know, I forget Virgil's exact response.
He was like whoa, wait a second.
Yeah, why do you want to drag him down with you? Yeah. I like the way he put that. He's like, there's no need to, you know, get him a title just for the sake of him having a title. He wants to get him to the point that once he fights these guys, that he wants to win a belt and stay champion. I love that mentality. I like that Virgil's trying to protect him in that regard. So the question is, how, you know, do you just keep him active? He's, I think, going to be number two now, right behind Zuto Ramirez for the WBA belt. Now, as you said, if Canelo and Triple G do wind up fighting in September, that means Dimitri Bivol will probably have to honor a mandatory title defense. That could give us Bivol and Zuto. So that would leave Buwatsi. It's like, what do you do with that ranking? He's going to want to fight at least once or twice more, whether the second fight is a title shot. You know, you just got to keep him active. So do you risk him in against like a Callum Smith? You know, I'm trying to think of like the guys that the zone could throw at him, because Callum, I think, is number one. You know, is he going to wait out Better Be It than Joe Smith? He's the number one contender of the WBC. So, I can see those guys kind of do what everyone else is doing at 168, waiting on Canelo. I think a few guys are just going to kind of wait out that title shot. None of them should risk it.
Right, but 175 is a division where I think we won't see Canelo out for a while, and it's a division where these guys aren't waiting for Canelo, whereas 168, 160, everyone's got that, you know, ticket out waiting for Canelo to choose them. 175, I think, is a division where they don't have that cloud hanging over them, where Better Be Evan Smith are obviously fighting June 18th. Zerto, Circa, these are all good fights, but I do agree with you, Buwatsi. You don't have to throw him in there with some of these big guys yet. You know, he's a guy that can sell tickets over in the UK. He had a great crowd there, a spirited fight, back and forth. Buwatsi was in control for the majority of the fight. But another name that we can add to this really fun 175-pound picture. And hopefully, you know, they all start to fight each other. I think they want to, too. That's the thing. It's like a lot of these guys are on the north side of 30. Better Be of looking for big fights. Joe Smith obviously will fight anyone. Zerto will fight, will wants big fights. I mean, Golden Boy's pushing the hell out of him. And then you add Buwatsi with the whole UK and Eddie behind him. Fun division. Really, really fun division. All right, Jake, let's
I'm sorry, not to dive too far, but one name I did want to throw out there, and he just won on Friday night. Jean-Pascal wouldn't be a bad fight for Buwatsi.
Well, that's
he's ruined a lot of guys' careers, and, you know, he's also been beaten by some very good fighters. So that would be, you know, Buwatsi could maybe, like, find his Dimitri Bivol moment with Pascal, where, you know, he's coming in off a big win off a Fan Long. You know, he's probably going to want a title shot, but again, the belts are kind of tied up. They're going to have to wait their title shots. Anthony Yard will probably get the next shot at the Better Be of Angel Smith winner. So these guys, I think that, I would love to see that fight maybe within the next fight or two for Buatsi. So I would also, I want to see Buatsi like maybe 20 and all, that's when he fights for the titles. And he could be fighting for the Undisputed Championship by that point.
There's a lot going on at 175, a fun division. Let's talk about, before we say goodbye, last week, out of nowhere, a fight of the year discussion broke out on Twitter. It must have been a slow day. I responded to one of your tweets, set off like a domino effect. Later, I realized that you said it was a leading fight of the year, not the leading fight of the year. That we're talking about Charlo Castaño. We're getting closer to the halfway point of the year. It's been a phenomenal few months. Fight of the year discussion. That's not something you have to have in May or June, but it is fun to talk about. Right. My top three right now, in no order. Let me put it in order just so I can get it on the record here. I got Fundora Lubin number one. I got Wood Conlon number two, and I got Charlo Castaño number three. These are all great fights, close fights, title implications. One's an undisputed fight. You know, one was like an eliminator of sorts for the WBA. One was another one was an eliminator of sorts too for the WBC or whatever it was with Fundora and Lubin. But that's my order right now. What do you got?
Pretty much the same thing, and I'm assuming we're limiting it to men fighter.
Well, that's another. My next question would be that.
Gotcha. Well, because the female fight of the year is slam dunk.
Yes.
But yeah, as far as the men's, it's weird. Like the order you just mentioned, Lubin Fundora finished dead last in that little poll that I did. You know, of the four fights I listed. But I'm with you. To me, that was the best fight of the year. I guess it was as significant as Wood Conlon. I just felt it had more ebb and flow, a little higher skill level. Mm-hmm. Wood Conlon is always going to be remembered for its amazing ending. You know, Wood. You know, he was dead to rights, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, dropped Conlon in the 11th, and then just completely knocked him out in the 12th. That's what put that in the fight of the year discussion. But it seemed like Conlon was kind of running away with the fight up until Wood had that great surge late. Charlo Castaño, the reason why I mentioned it, the first six rounds were like, it was somehow better than the first fight. It was, to me, I was like, okay, this is the fight of the year. It's like, if it keeps up his pace. It's to Jermell Charlo's testament that it's not the leading candidate because he started to pull away in the second half. So that's what drops it down on the list, but it still has to be in that discussion. But I'm with you. For now, Sebastian Fundora and Erickson Lubin is my fight of the year pick among the men.
Isn't it a great thing that we have like four or five options and we're in May and we have a loaded June and July and we expect the second half of the year where Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence are going to tangle. We're going to see Usyk and Joshua get in there again. We're going to see some of the bigger names that fought earlier this year fight their second fight of the year. So that's like what it means. I know it's a volatile question. It's on Twitter. There's not a lot of nuance on Twitter. But, you know, you say, listen, like we're getting huge fights. It wasn't a knock on Charlo Castaño. I just think that you're right. Your point there where Charlo erased all doubt and it kind of went from a very even fight, a close fight for six rounds to the point where Charlo just put his foot on the gas pedal and got him out of there. Still a great atmosphere for an undisputed fight.
Absolutely.
Awesome stuff from there. Now, next question for you. You're part of the Boxing Writers Association. You have a picture of vice president of Boxing Writers Association?
That is correct.
Okay. So will Taylor Serrano be part of the men's fight of the year or will it be its own category? Because I feel like there hasn't been a fight in the women's division that in this discussion to be with the men, because if that's the case, if Taylor Serrano was added to the men, then we have ourselves a whole new conversation here.
Yeah, so it's weird. The only category where we really vote on like female fighter is the fighter of the year category. So like Amanda Serrano won it last year. Katie Taylor won it 2 years before that. Right. Clarissa Shields won it before that. But that's the only female exclusive category. And like none of them have ever been nominated for like, you know, like any, you know, like for example, just Jordan Maldonado has not been named, you know, trainer of the year for training Amanda Serrano. So they've never been in the fight. This is the first time where I've seen the BWA, like, you know, they tweeted out that this fight will be nominated among the men.
Wow.
So I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, it should be in the discussion already. I just don't know why we haven't done it. I mean, because Michaela Mayer and Maiva Hamadou should have been in that discussion last year. Terry Harper and Natasha Jonas the year before. It's like there's been, we know, there's been just these amazing fights. Katie Taylor, Delphine Persoon, both fights, really. But especially that first one. It's like, I don't know why we're picking this. I guess because of the historical significance, you know, it's like, okay, it has to be in the discussion. But maybe it is time that, you know, we have to expand the male and female awards. If we're still going to give out a male fighter of the year and a female fighter of the year, then we have to expand, you know, those other categories as well. Otherwise, it has to be all inclusive in every single category.
I agree there. But you're right. It's just like, look, the sport, I mean, women's boxing is growing every day. I mean, this is a breakthrough year for women's boxing. It hasn't always been the case. There haven't always been three or four fights to choose from for women fight of the year. But now we have that. So if you have a chance to where we know going forward, hopefully, I mean, I don't see it going backwards, where there will be five or six to choose from so they can have their own category. But that's interesting, Taylor Serrano being included with the men this year, because, I mean, you were there, I was there. I mean, it, you don't have to be there to know what how special of a night that was. That right. is the clear runaway fight of the year for me.
Yeah, I was going to say men or female, it is. And maybe that is another reason why maybe it's, you know, it has to be in that discussion because it is so much better than every other. To me, that is the fight of the year for every reason you just mentioned, like the significance. It was the undisputed championship, the two best female fighters in the world going at it, just the atmosphere. I mean, I'm Irish, my wife's Puerto Rican, I grew up around Boricua culture. So like, that was like a perfect storm of like all these worlds colliding in New York, no less.
Right, and your wife was into the fight, so that means a lot.
Yeah, exactly, like texting me like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So, yeah, I mean, that was like, it was the fight of the year. It's arguably the event of the year as well. So
It had so much pressure. There was so much pressure on those two ladies to deliver, because if it ended up being a dud, it would have set back sport. It would have set back women's boxing, but it over-delivered as for
once. Yeah, it over-delivered. Well, and Eddie Hearn and Jake Paul had to deliver too, because we know everybody loves those two. So
I thought it was a big, as much as everything, they told me. Everything went right. You were there at all the press conferences, you were there at
exactly.
the weigh-ins. Everything felt different. I was just like, man, I hope the fight delivers. And we kind of knew it would on paper, the power of Amanda and the perseverance of Katie. They're going to fight again, maybe fight three times, because they're just perfect for each other. But that's, that's an interesting debate. And I think that's something that will rage on for the next couple months. A fun debate. I mean, this is good. We're talking about the health of the sport. The fact that there are five, six, seven fight of the year candidates in May is a really, really good thing. All right, Jake.
Always
I appreciate the time, man. This was fun. Let's get you back on again soon.
Absolutely.
Keep that New York accent. Don't ever change. Hopefully the Knicks can remain or get back into the playoff contention and we can all be happy. Yeah. But thanks a lot for coming on.
Dan, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being on here. Really appreciate it.
All right, great work from Jake Donovan. Very thorough conversation on what's going on in three different weight classes. Hopefully we see some clarity. Last week, we introduced Mailbag Monday, and it was a great success. So we're going to bring back Mailbag Monday again. I got some great questions here. Tweet at me on Sundays or even now. We'll get next week's going too. But our first question comes from Slime Recruit. He says, do you truly believe that Canelo Benavidez is unlikely? Do you think being the challenge-seeking champ that he is, Canelo will be willing to take on the Mexican monster? Well, after talking to Jake and figuring out everything that's going on with the mandatories and Canelo getting the blessing from the WBC, to fight Golovkin and everything that's going on with everything else, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but I do think it happens. It's a matter of time. It's just a matter of when. You know, Benavidez playing his cards perfectly, becoming the interim champion with the WBC at 168. So by rule, Canelo will have to see him soon if he wants to keep all his straps at 168. Could Benavidez go on to fight a Charlo or a Morel, maybe get knocked off? Who knows? It's a fight I want to see. I tweeted afterwards. The fight at 168 to me is Canelo versus Benavidez. I think that Benavidez is the best fighter at 168 not named Canelo Alvarez. Do I think he can beat Canelo? Maybe, but probably not. I think Canelo can hammer away at the body. There's one thing on Benavidez is his defense is not elite. It's not up to par with his offense. So Canelo can hammer to the body. You can get a win, but it's pretty clear to me at 168, the man other than Canelo is David Benavidez, and Canelo's going to be asked about it everywhere he goes now. It's just, that's what it is. If Benavidez keeps knocking dudes off, he's been a two-time champion. I understand a lot of that. You're a two-time champion by being undefeated, and being undefeated is because, he failed the drug test. It's because he lost a title on the scales. But he has been the guy at 168 for a while that is Benavidez, and he could do a lot of things in there that can give Canelo issues. Throw close to 60, 70 punches around, good power, good jab, active. Those are things that give Canelo fits. I do think it happens. It's just a matter of when does it happen. Luis Ceja, could Benavidez end up with a Zerto-type career where he doesn't get the big fights as one of the physically biggest of the division? I don't think so. I think Benavidez will get these top fights. He has a better promoter. He's got the PBC behind him. He's got a whole network behind him. I don't think he'll make the same mistakes that Zerto did. I don't think he'll make the same mistakes of sitting out for, I hope he doesn't, sitting out for, 2-3 years or however long Zerto sat out in a contract dispute. I think he'll learn from that. I think Benavidez and PBC, I think the PBC has too much invested in Benavidez. Look at that crowd. You know, that's a whole market that they can just keep tapping into. Only 25 years old. As for being the physically biggest of the division, that, you know, that's, he's been that for a while now. They could call him a weight bully, Benavidez, but he's starting to make that weight a lot better. He's going to be physically bigger than Caleb Plant. He's going to be physically bigger than Jermall Charlo, but, you know, still going to weigh the same. That's why they have weight classes. So I don't think he'll make the same mistakes as Zerto. I think Benavidez has got a little bit of a better promoter and a better team with him. Joshua Miller asks, do you think Josh Taylor will give Jack Catterall a rematch in his next fight? And if that rematch does happen, how do you see it going? Well, according to Ben Davison, trainer of Josh Taylor, a rematch with Jack Catterall is the fight that he wants. There's also Top Rank News last week. They're pushing for a Josh Taylor, Josh Taylor, Jose Cepeda fight. I think that Catterall fight has to happen next for Josh Taylor. It's going to follow him for the rest of his career if he doesn't try to rectify that win, as funny as that sounds, because I had Catterall winning that first fight. So it's going to have to happen soon too, because I think that Taylor wants to fight in July or August. So it's either going to be a Catterall rematch, which I think is probably easy to make, could end up on ESPN2, or it could be just an in-house Top Rank fight between Taylor and Zepeda. I hope it's Catterall. I hope that's the fight next. I think Josh Taylor can win the rematch if he does the right thing, hire a strength and conditioning coach, a nutritionist, make that weight better. So I do think Josh Taylor is the more talented fighter, has more raw skills. I just think he was, you know, looking at one, you know, had one foot out the door going to 147. Obviously, he's not doing that. And Catterall had a good game plan. But if I think they fought 10 times, you know, Josh Taylor would win the majority of those fights. Donovan Cass, my guy, in a sport that usually doesn't have the most pleasant endings to one's career, who do you think bowed out most gracefully? Lennox Lewis comes to mind first. The fact that he retired as the heavyweight king of boxing, didn't, you know, have any comebacks, just went out on top, and, you know, has that distinguished vibe to him. A guy that didn't stick around too long, went out as the heavyweight champion. That holds a lot of water for me. Obviously, there's Andre Ward, who also went out on top as a unified champ. Floyd Mayweather left the sport with all his faculties, as he'll tell you over and over again. It's one of his main talking points. But those are the three of the modern era that come to mind: Lennox Lewis, Andre Ward, Floyd Mayweather. I hope this list continues to grow. That's the worst thing in the sport, is seeing guys stick around too long, legends stick around too long, like, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard sticking around too long. You know, Manny Pacquiao. I mean, you can go on and on. Mike Tyson losing in an exhibition fight. Or Mike Tyson losing the last couple fights of his career. Evander Holyfield. I mean, I could sit here for days talking about fighters that, went on too long and kind of embarrassed themselves. Finally, last question comes from David Cushion. I know where this question's going. Dan, what is your favorite fight from any of the Rocky and Creed movies? For me, it's got to be Rocky's rematch with Clubber in Rocky III. Great fight, Clubber versus Rocky III. I got to go with Rocky Ivan Drago, Rocky IV, Russia, Christmas night, Cold War is lurking over the fight. It ended up being an outstanding one, too. Drago, I actually went back and did the stats on this. Drago landed 61 of 72 punches in the first round. You don't see that type of percentages anymore. Rocky only threw 21 punches in the first round. Total domination from Drago. Then round two came. Rocky, you know, he dug down deep. Finally landed something on Drago. Not only landed, but cut Drago. And then Drago went on. Back and forth, 12, 13, 14 rounds. Just when you thought it was going to be over for Rocky, he lands 17 of 18. Giving us that final stand for the ages. Knocks out Drago. Wins the Cold War. Wins over the crowd in Russia. For me, it will always be Rocky IV. It will always be Rocky versus Drago. There isn't any wrong answers here besides Rocky versus Thunderlips or Rocky Balboa, the fifth installment of Rocky, which absolutely sucked. There it is. Mailbag Monday. There it is, our episode for the week. Shout out to Ronnie Jerez for producing this show. He graduates from Seton Hall this week. Got a job waiting for him here at John Boy. What a life. What a life from young Ronnie, the producer. Thanks to Jake Donovan for coming on the show. And thank you for listening. We're going to be back Thursday with a very, very special edition of Inside Boxing Live on the road. That's all I can say right now. It's a secret, but you'll be hearing about it on Thursday. Thank you, everybody. Catch you next time.